Charlie Charrington. It was thus that I first encountered the captain. When I was at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, there was a lady student there, and I had designs on her donut. She was the daughter of a handsome Indian doctor lady and some British chap. And she had a decanter. And she had this heavy black hair, which she chose to do up on the top of her head in this tight sort of donut ring arrangement. And when the glasses were a wee bit tedious, I find her attention drawn. That's fixed by decanter. Donut ring hair. And he couldn't stop them, you know, but fantasies would play through the mind's eye. The wackiest of which for it was the viciously sharpened shears.
The notion of stalking D. Jarrington through the dark corridors of our dark with my shears, you know.
She for me! I never told her about this, and I mean, I've never mentioned it to anyone, but I suppose she must have felt me looking her way in an interested fashion. And this sparked up a bit of a friendship, and so it was me she asked if I'd like to go with her to meet her father. This is odder than it might sound, because she'd never met her father. I mean, possibly she'd been viewed by him a couple of times as a toddler. She wasn't sure. Anyway, the fellow was going to be appearing in the pub round the corner, the Marlborough. And I said, oh, yeah, well, yeah, fine, I'll go with you. And then, listen, I had always regarded the bowler hat as probably the pinnacle of burglary. But not as it sat on the head of Captain Charlie Charrington. To be sure, I think his bowler hat was a wee bit curly of brim, a bit smacked down at the back. But listen, this was 1959. It was going to be a good few years before Steed of the Avengers had one of those. And not those jobs. And the captain exuded a sort of dash, a panache. I mean, his daughter was a wee bit nervous. She was now powdering her nose for the second time. And I was 19, and I said to the captain, I said, so what do you do now then, sir? And Captain Charlie Charrington, with his twiggy eyes, by way of reply, he took my hand. And he put it inside his jacket. And I felt his gun. And I think it was the captain's gun which fired my passion. And I began to woo the captain's daughter in earnest now. But I mean, it's in her entirety. It wasn't just the donut ring he was after now. That sad to relate, she chose to marry another and go off with him to Canada, taking her mother and her brother with her. Which is mine for 8 years past now. 8 years. 8 years later, saw me attempting to write comedy sketches for the radio. Monday night at home, and I saw that the Ideal Home exhibition was on at Olympia. I said, "Give us a ticket for that. I'll see if I can write something funny about that." Went into Olympia. I was halted by this particular stall there. Well, it wasn't the stall, as a matter of fact. It was the salesman, the pitcher. He was mesmeric, and all he was selling was sores. But not sores of your usual variety. These are sort of like string, in a sense. It's like you throw one end of your sore over an overhanging bough, say. So we don't know in that fashion. That wasn't the only use of these things, evidently. And maybe the Gurkhas could take off a man's head in one room. They used to practice a lot on goats. Because I know these things like there's no tomorrow. You couldn't believe that everyone had overhanging bowel problems. Goat breeders, antisocial fantasies or what. And there was an Indian gentleman there, and he didn't know whether he wanted one or not. And my new hero addressed him in an extremely foreign tongue. Yeah, but wait, that. He went, and the fellow looked blank. He tried with another one. Yeah, but hold on. And the fellow still looked blank, but on the third one, he got him. And he went off with eight. And then he saw me. The seller of souls saw me. And he turned to his assistant. He said, "We're closing for 10 minutes. You," he said, "are coming with me." I said, "Listen, we follow you, guy." Through doors which said no exit. And then in an extremely ill-lit corridor. And then no admittance. But we went in, and anyway, we were in the exhibitor's canteen. That's not me, it's not me, it's not we're in the exhibitor's canteen, and I was parked at a table there, and he was off getting a pot of tea for two and a couple of chocolate eclairs. And when he sat down with me, he said, "How's Dee?" God, how's Dee? It's the captain. It's Captain Charlie Charrington of St. Saws. Oh, I said, well, I don't know. I said, she got married years ago. She went to Canada. Well, yeah, he had heard vaguely about that. But isn't he not seen her? He's not seen his daughter. It's all those years ago in the Marlborough pub. And then what? Anyway, I was able to fill out the captain's 10 minutes with some images of his splendid daughter. But given the fact, you know, mentioned the marriage, I was surprised by his last remark. "Look after my D, won't you?" he said. I said, yes, sir, I will. And and all of a sudden it was 1972, and it was that fateful morning when I was meant to be going to Munich. Now, I missed the first train, no train connection due to some farce in Dave Hill's kitchen the night before. Why did you have to be in Munich? It was in those days, 1972, I had my own little comedy outfit, Ken Campbell's Roadshow. And we were into international humour in those days, you know? The humour of panning large lengths of elastic in people's faces. Sticking ties on, hammering nails up your nose, and sticking live ferrets down your trousers. And we'd been booked for a 3-week residency in Munich's legendary Fuck the Hell Bar. The Fuck the Hell Bar is in the souvenir programme. I wasn't really in that one, I just directed it. I wanted to be in Munich, and I'll tell you why, because the ferret was on a one-way ticket due to the rabies laws, you see. I just wanted to be there, nose her, hunt around and find some decent crowd to look after the creature after the run. Oh, and also, I trained them up in a new routine. What's that new? As a matter of fact, I pitched it from Abbott and Costello. It's their baseball routine. They call it Who's On First Base. But I don't get a word from it. I translated it into soccer, into football terms. And so our version went, it's a way of muddling the opposition by giving your team code names. So as we've gone, who's on the left wing? What's on the right wing? I don't know. Is centre forward? Fit person. Who's on the left wing? Yes! Ha! And so on. 7 pages of this group. Israeli geezers came into the Fuck the Hell Bar, and they were so impressed with this who's on the left wing, they had it translated into Hebrew, and they had it flown out to Tel Aviv to direct operations on it. And I'll do my Hebrew for you. Me back up personally, Marga family, and lawyer day up, Galoots magazine. That's who's on the left wing, what's on the right wing? I don't know, he's centre forward. Me, Begabasini, Malaga family, and the Lion Day, Galoots magazine. Oh, and I've got another one. Before that got drummed into the director's head, I had another one, and I'll tell you why. In those days in Tel Aviv, there seemed to be a lot of Hebrew speakers who didn't know the way, they didn't know where they were. And they'd come up to you, with their maps and their charts and their address on a bit of paper, in a very demanding way. You know, I don't know why they came to me, I thought I knew the way. And it'd be nice if you would sort of get rid of them in Hebrew, wouldn't it? That'd be good. And I was in a cafe, and the proprietor had thoughtfully laid out in the menus useful phrases for the visitor, but it'd been in phonetic English, you know, rather than backwards Hebrew. And so I put together a slightly surreal reply for these occasions. Ani rotsar lekulef tapuzim. Excuse me, I wish to peel oranges. Ani rotsar lekulef tapuzim. Sometimes they hear my English accent coming through. Ani rotsar lekulef tapuzim. Oh really? What, right away, old boy? Ani rotsar lekulef tapuzim. But you're not a woman. No. No, I said no, but I said this is a country
young as it is, where a man may peel an orange, is it not? No, he said, listen, he said, Annie Rotsar is the feminine form. What you're saying there is, I, a lady, wish to peel oranges. They lose their way then, and okay. I noticed that I missed the second train connection to Munich, and it wasn't like the light company was going to be dull out there. Sylvester McCoy, of course, was going to be there, but Marcel Steiner was in the team then, and he just come up with this wonderful invention, the smallest theatre in the world, you know, I think, a two-seater theatre he built on the sidecar of his motorbike, and Alan Berry was there with us doing his comedy drunk interruptions, if he wasn't too pissed. I was paralysed. A paralysis had set in, and I assumed it was terminal. And the phrase that came into my head was entropy of the bone marrow. That's what I had. And I can recall seeing my reflection in the mirror. I said, "Well, you're all hollowed out, Campbell. It's all gonna crumble with you." And I felt I could manoeuvre myself with my elbow. That was a bit. Oh, like this. You know, I felt some sort of awful insect. I manoeuvred myself to bed and fell into a stiff sleep. Eventually, to be awoken about 3 o'clock in the morning by the phone ringing. And it was Dee Charrington from Toronto. And she wanted to be talking about her father. I said, "Your father, Dee." I said, "What do you mean? You mean the captain?" Just saying those words, the captain, well, that's a magic for me, woman. The captain. And I flushed away the entropy out of the bone marrow, ready for anything now, yeah? And sad to relate, Dee's father, the captain, had died. He died in mysterious circumstances in Oman. And the body had now been flown back to England. The funeral was to be on Thursday. Neither Dee nor her mother could attend it. Could I stand in for them? I said, I'd be pleased to do that for you, Dee. In that event, would I ring his telephone number, the number of a certain Doris Contardi, it being Doris Contardi who had accompanied the captain's body back to England. I said, "Well, it's about half past 3 in the morning now, Dee. Shall I leave it till later?" And she's got a Canadian voice now, and she said, "I'd rather you rang now." I said, "Yeah, okay, no, I'll ring now." Okay, but now I'm ringing up to this Doris Contardi, and eventually speaking to a Betty Posh voice. And then I swear there was a time when Betty Posh people would put a D where an R should be, you know, so it wasn't very, but Veddy. And not Doris either, but Doddis. Doris Contardi. And Doris Contardi told me that she was an archaeologist lady and that she'd been commissioned by the Sultan of Oman to dig up stuff round Muscat to stop a museum there for the tourists and whatnot. And her archaeological site facilitator, known wonderfully as Sheikh Fixit, had been Captain Charlie Charrington. Evidently ideal for this position, since he knew every nuance of every dialect of Arabic from Morocco to the Gulf. But there'd been filled people there, and there'd been something of a party, and everybody wanted the captain to stay. But he'd met an old friend, and he'd said, "No, there is something I must do." And he'd gone off into the desert with the old friend. And you know, he was on heart tablets. But we don't think it was the heart attack which was fatal. It was the fall backwards on the rocks. But there was doubt in Doris Contardi's voice as to whether that is what had really happened. She said, "Will Dee be coming to the funeral and her mother?" I said, "No, I'm afraid that they can't make it, but they've asked me to stand in for them." But then, actually with inspiration, I said, but maybe his brother, Paul, maybe Paul will be coming. She said, "The captain had a son." I said, I'm not sure. I said, "You need to grab his name, Paul." And then I had to be charitable. I said, "Dee, that contardy woman is very worried about the existence of Paul." And she
she said, well, Paul's coming. Paul's coming to the funeral, can he stay with you? I said, well, yeah, of course he can. Wow, Paul came, terrific geezer. Listen, I said, Paul, I said, how well did you know your father? He said, I met him on 4 occasions, he said. Once when I was 5, once when I was 11, once when I was 15, once when I was 19. I said, when did you first feel the gun? He said, I first felt the gun when I was 5, he said. And then I felt the gun again when I was 11. And when I was 11, I was also shown the uncut gems and pointed to an X marking the spot of a certain island in the South Pacific. Also, I was instructed this way, that if ever our paths should chance to meet, I must never call the man Dad or Father. The name was always to be Charlie or the Captain. Crossword puzzle it is, yes. The favourite anagram in The Guardian for funeral is real fun. And so it turned out with the Captain's funeral. He had a proper burial for the Captain, and we had 4 weeping women round the grave. We had Doris Contardi, the archaeologist lady. Then a lovely chummy lady called Sammy. And then a sort of Venus in Furs type with Gwendolyn. And the thing was, the Captain had been living with the 3 of them at the same time, unbeknown to each other. And they all piled up round the grave. Wow. The Venus in Furs, Gwendolyn, she brought some male shoulders to weep and swoon on. But not so Sammy, not so Doris Contardi. And so down to Paul and I to wheel them off to the pub, leaving behind the other lady. We never got to know who she was, the lone and anonymous griever at the graveside. And then in the pub, not spouting about the Captain and Sammy. It was the simple love of Sammy, really, who recalled the first time she met the Captain. She was met off a military plane in Aden. And to her, it was just so wonderful that such a wonderful man had managed to find any time at all for her. And this Contardi, I think, was a wee bit hurt, you know, and it softened the hurt there. Eventually, Sammy was to move in with Doris Contardi to nostalgia, reminisce the remainder of their lives away. There was a reading of the will. The Captain had left his effects variously between Doris Contardi, Sammy and the Venus in Furs, but with this proviso. Were it to chance that the 3 of them all snuffed it within 6 months of the reading of the will, in that event, another envelope must be opened. I said, well, I said, Paul, I said, what a dad. Funeral. I said, fuck it. I wouldn't have missed that for anything. We must keep in touch. Yeah, fine. And then, we waved him off on the plane back to Toronto. Well, it'd be less than 6 months later, I was in a cinema, and I was watching the first run of The Exorcist. Do you remember that thing out there? The Exorcist begins with an archaeological dig. Northern Iraq, it says, and a bunch of Arabs digging, and then there's a call to prayer. And then you see the little Arab boy is running through the archaeological site. Boom! And then you're treated to a shot of the legs of Max von Sydow. And then the whole impressive body of the Japanese, the archaeological site facilitator, the sheikh fixes, if you like. And then the little boy says, in Arabic, so they get the subtitles here. They found things, arrowheads, coins, lamps. Max von Sydow now swarming around. He looks up and says, this is strange, they're not of the same period. And then he uncovers the appalling objects. Too appalling for us to be able to see properly just yet. So we're now in the cafe. We're in the cafe. And it's what, about 2 hours later? 2 hours later, Max von Sydow has aged 20 years. And he's on the heart tablets now, isn't it? And then we're in that little museum, heavy Arab company in the little museum. Arabic, you can hear the word shaitan, la la la, shaitan, yeah? Subtitle, evil comes from evil. Arab turns to Max von Sydow. He says, we wish you could stay, sir. Max, there is something I must do. And then Max is nearly trampled to death by a runaway horse, and then he's driving. He's driving towards the archaeological site. There are those Arabs in flowing white robes with big guns. They relax a bit when they see it's Max.
Max goes on to the archaeological site, and then you see it, Max. Well, you didn't see the wee bit before, but not like this. The dog dragon statue. And if there is wild dog to fight himself to death down there, as the sun comes up behind the statue. And then there's Max there, sweating like fuck. Cut to Georgetown, USA. And that line, there is something I must do, is redundant in the movie. I mean, fuck, it's confusing. What did Max have to do? There is something I must do. What? I must go watch the sun come up behind a statue. And then, do you remember, what is this thing up there? I mean, once we leave northern Iraq, where, and we're in USA, it's all about a little American girl, and her head keeps twiddling right round, and she can't stop spinning green stuff and knickers. Do you know this movie's been going on now? To that house since we saw Max von Sydow. Wonder what he's up to. He might be able to do something too. You haven't seen him? Wow. And he's in Woodstock, USA now, and he's writing a book. Oh, it's absolutely interesting.
There's something I must do.
Anyway, I was on the phone to Paul in Toronto. I said, Paul, have you seen The Exorcist? He said, yeah, I have, he said. He said, listen, he said, that was the captain's dig. He said, northern Iraq, bollocks. The whole thing was shot in Muscato, man, and the captain was working for the Exorcist Film Company as well as Doris Contardi. He was batting around her man in a helicopter, finding locations for them. And Max von Sydow, basically some of his characterisation on Captain Charlie Chaplin, a heart tablets, one. And that museum you see there, that's Doris Contardi's little museum. And of course it was a party for the Exorcist Film Company and crew out there, when they all wanted the captain to stay, but he said, no, there is something I must do. They'd gone off with his old friend into the desert and to his death. And that his death had been unspeakably weirder than a heart attack. But Doris Contardi had to spend a lot of money around Muscat to buy an accident if he permitted to fly our beloved captain back to England. And that line, there is something I must do, is in that film as a mark of respect and love for Captain Charlie Charrington. There is. There is, I would suggest, a hole in the plotting of the Exorcist. So how did the appalling object get from northern Iraq to the bottom of some stairs in Georgetown, USA? At this point, I'd like to introduce you to this gentleman here.